Caroline Stephen, financial journalist here. Millionaires have all mastered one secret. They all understand the power of the slight edge. So what is the slight edge? Well, it is the triumph over the mundane. Simple, productive actions repeated consistently over time. Successful people, successful traders understand the power of the slight edge. Unsuccessful people don't. In today's episode of Talking Trading, we speak to Dr. Harry Stanton on Jeff Olson's book, The Slight Edge, and how you can use it and apply it in your life to bring you success and manifest results. It's a powerful book and it is well worth reading. But first, we hear from Louise Bedford in Mindpower on how trading is a gift.
I want you to think of trading as a gift. Do you know the last time I was given a gift that was so personal, so intuitive, so caring and so on the money with my needs? It just made me feel so loved and so cared for and really so honored. Trading is your gift. This is a gift that you give yourself. Imagine receiving a gift before you sit down to trade. Think of those feelings. Think of feeling cared for. Think of feeling nurtured. Think of your needs being met. And then when you sit down to do your analysis or to place your trade, you'll be in a much better psychological position. You will be welcoming wealth into your account. You will be making fewer mistakes and you will have more clarity because of it. Trading is the gift that you give yourself.
Attention all business owners. Would you like to build a more profitable business that doesn't suck the life out of you? Hey, it's Jason Cunningham here. And over three powerful days, I'm going to show you how to step-by-step grow your profit, reduce your stress, and build a business that doesn't rely on you. And as a result, you'll grow a valuable asset others are clamoring to buy, but you won't want to sell it because it gives you the income and commands the lifestyle that you deserve. Join me in Noosa from November 30 to December the 2nd for the Have Your Cake and Sell It Too Business Retreat. I'll not only transform your business, but I guarantee you, I'll change your life forever. To find out more, go to our website, thepractice.com.au. Hope to see you there.
Dr. Harry Stanton is recognised as one of Australia's leading peak performance coaches. He is the author of 9 books and was the first author in Australia to release a book on positive thinking back in 1979. He is the co-author of Let the Trade Winds Flow, and he is still a practising psychologist down in Tasmania. We talk to him now about Jeff Olson's book, The Slight Edge, and how to apply its principles for greater success in your life. Harry, let's talk about The Power of the Slight Edge, the book by the American Jeff Olson. It is the power of the slight edge which makes people triumphant. The slight edge is the triumph of the mundane. The slight edge is relentless. It cuts both ways. Used productively, it carries you to success. Used carelessly, it pulls you down to failure. So if we define successful people, Harry, as those people whose lives are clearly working for them professionally, financially, personally, those statistics are about 5%, or 1 in 20 people are achieving success. The difference, according to this guy, is the slight edge. What do you think about that?
I think his figures are probably fairly right, and I think the main reason he gives, which I think is very valid, it's the people who take responsibility for their own decisions, and most people don't. It's always someone else to blame. Someone else is at fault. It's never their own fault. But the successful people, I think, will make a decision. If it's wrong, okay, I admit I'm wrong, let's move on.
And responsibility is something I actually had in my notes to bring up later, but seeing as you brought it up, He says that people who live on the success side of the curve live in responsibility. People on the failure side of the curve live in blame. True or false?
That's right. I know many of the patients I work with and so on, both men and women, it's quite obvious why they're having the problems they are, because they're always finding someone else to blame or something to blame that and they stops them from really progressing.
All right, well, let's talk about this. The slight edge is a triumph of the mundane. Simple, productive actions repeated consistently over time, or simple errors in judgment repeated consistently over time. What millionaires have done is simply to master the mundane. And if you apply mastery of the mundane, you will see your goals and aspirations coming to pass.
What he's talking about, I just think, is discipline, really. He's virtually saying, okay, if you want to get ahead, what you have to do is discipline yourself to do the things that are necessary over and over and over again, and to not think, oh, well, it won't matter if I miss out today, or I think I'll have that extra hour in bed, and that sort of thing. He's really talking about discipline. What he's really saying, I think, again and again in that book, is that you set a goal for yourself, and to get to that goal, you decide what actions you have to take, and then you must do them over and over and over again, not find reasons for not doing them this day or not doing them this week or so on. And I think that's the point he's making continually.
Okay, so he then goes on to say, well, why aren't people more disciplined? Why don't they do them over and over again? So there are three reasons he gives. Number one, they're easy to do, but the simple things in life are also easy not to do. So unsuccessful people choose what they think is the path of least resistance, but it really isn't, because the results you get end up being harder to deal with.
Again, it's discipline though, isn't it? Sticking to what you think is necessary.
Okay, so the reason number two that he thinks more people don't apply the slight edge is that results are invisible initially. The difference between success and failure is subtle. You can't see or recognize it during the process. By the time you get the feedback, the real work has been done. When you get to the point that everyone else can see your results and tell you what good choices you've made, they notice your good fortune, they slap you on the back, they tell you how happy you are, the critical slight edge choices you already have made are ancient history. And the chances are, at the time you made those critical slight edge choices, nobody noticed but you.
Yes, I think that's quite an important point, that in fact it is subtle. But one of the things I've noticed with practice I run with patients I have, I don't think it's any good telling them, look, what we're doing is going to be real good for you. You mightn't see it for a month, 6 months, 3 years, 15 years, but eventually it will. Unless I can help them see results fairly quickly, they're not going to feel they're getting any value out of what we do. And I think people generally like good results to be obvious fairly quickly.
Why is that?
It's reinforcing. If you are doing something that you think is good, it's going to get you good results and so on, but that it's going to take a long time and the changes will be very subtle, I think most people haven't got the patience for that. You've got to see it fast, or fairly fast.
All right, so third point why people don't apply the slight edge, and it's similar to the second, is that they seem insignificant. So what people think is that what I do right now doesn't really matter, but it does.
I think he's got another very strong point, that in fact it is doing the little things over and over, day after day after day, that get you where you want to go. Not putting it off, saying I'll do it, I don't feel like it today, but I'll do it tomorrow. And you might do it tomorrow, but then I won't bother about the next day. What he's talking about is setting goals for yourself and perhaps breaking them down into smaller sub-goals and so on, but that every day doing something towards achieving those goals. And that if you start putting it off some days because you don't really feel like it, or the sun's shining in the wrong direction, or the dog didn't smile at you well enough this morning, you're not going to get anywhere. In a large sense, I think it's been brought out. For example, talking a lot down in Tasmania now, housing market's booming for the first time in yonks, and people are finding it very hard to get in, first homeowners and so on. And it's been pointed out that people are finding it often very hard to get together the money to have the deposit and so on because, well, I really need this overseas trip, and I've really got to go out to all these rock concerts and so on. In other words, they don't devote their full concentration towards achieving the thing that's most important to them, getting together the money for a deposit and not using the money for a lot of other things which are gratifying for the moment but which aren't getting them in the direction they want to go.
All right, let's talk about how the slight edge is productive habits. I'm going to tell a story about Will Smith, the movie star. One summer, he was 12 years old, and his father tore down a brick wall and told Will and his brother, who was 11 years old, to rebuild it. They said, "That's impossible." It took them half a year to do it. When it was finished, their father told them, "Don't ever tell me again that there is something you can't do." Will said, "You don't set out to build a wall. You set out to lay that first brick as perfectly as a brick can be laid, and you do that every single day, and soon you'll have a wall." That's what you're saying, isn't it?
Yeah. There's a Chinese philosopher whose name I have forgotten who said the longest journey begins with a single step. That's when I was writing a lot of books. When you start to write the book, you think, oh, God. I kept reminding myself of that, and I thought, okay, I'll dig a little hole here and put a little hole in it somewhere else. And you gradually take that first step, and then you take one little step after another and things start happening for you. But you can get intimidated by looking at a project and thinking it's too big, it's too hard. And that's where a technique which I call the Swiss cheese technique comes into it.
Oh, what's that?
Swiss cheese has holes in it. And the idea is, okay, you've got a big task ahead of you. Don't wait for a few hours, as you often do. I need a few hours to get started on this. That you think, oh, I've got 10 minutes. I'll poke a little hole in it here. I might write down the title and do something else. A little later, you poke another little hole in it. And it's amazing. After a while, the thing almost does itself.
The Swiss cheese. And is that because our human psyche, once we start something, we tend to need to finish it?
Yeah. But the fact is, a lot of people put off starting things because they feel, oh, I really need to devote a lot of time to this right now, and I haven't got the time, and you put it off. But once you think, oh, well, 10 minutes here, 10 minutes there, it becomes not 10 minutes, 15, 20, you get wrapped in it.
I'd like to ask a question. When you talk about the slight edge or the power of discipline with your clients, do people who have discipline and routinely do the things that get the job done, do they have higher levels of self-esteem than people who don't?
Not necessarily. You would think so. And quite a lot of people, as they become more and more aware that they're doing useful things, yes, their self-esteem rises. But a lot of people who really do have quite high esteem, who think very highly of themselves, you wonder why.
That's called delusion.
Yeah, it's called delusional behaviour. I do get a surprise sometimes. Some of the community leaders, politicians, these sort of people, because often a lot of them seem to have very high opinions of themselves, but that opinion wouldn't be shared by most of the others affected by them. You see, I think, you know, you come to modern things. Someone like Donald Trump, for example. I mean, he's gone bankrupt, what, hasn't he, 3, 4, 5 times? People have lost millions of dollars, and yet, obviously, he doesn't regard that as any sort of failure. He still regards himself as a great businessman, a great deal maker, and so on. And I think there are a lot of people like that, that so many of them are chairman of boards or chairman of big businesses and so on. The business goes bust and they have been given huge payouts and then you find they're CEO of some other company. Mm. And that also goes bust. And so these people obviously think they are really good at what they do. And the evidence is staring them in the face. They're not any good at what they do.
True. And in the financial industry, you have to be so careful of people who do have that delusion about themselves.
Yes, exactly. They cost people a lot of money.
Let's talk about the power of time. I wanted to ask this question because we live in the technological age where we tend to want to press a button, everything happens. So the natural progression in life is you plant, you cultivate, then you harvest. But in today's world, we tend to go from plant to harvest and forget the cultivation step. But the power of discipline only really works through the dimension of time. You need to just be disciplined long enough to see the results.
Yes, exactly. Look what you see with, well, top athletes, for example. The amount of work they put into what they do is incredible. They're building over time to be the best. So many, of course, are unable to achieve that, but still achieve a great deal. But it's a steady progress. They're cultivating their talents towards really refining them so they can reap the rewards of being the best or amongst the best in the world.
Let's talk about how successful people do whatever it takes to get the job done, that they are the antithesis of drama. They build their own dreams rather than spend their lives building the dreams of others. And they achieved results by making choices that are mundane, seemingly simple, seemingly insignificant.
Yeah, good point, that one. I think, in fact, simplicity is the keynote of success, which is constantly overlooked. The more complicated something is, I think, the less likely it is to achieve a beneficial result. Take a very simple example. I had a lady or a girl that saw me who'd had a terrible breakup with a boyfriend. She'd been upset for months and very miserable. And her mother had been a patient of mine years ago and finally convinced her to come along. And she went through a whole box of tissues and just terrible what had happened and so on. And I took her through something very simple that I often use, where you get rid of things by dumping them in quicksand, because nothing comes back from quicksand and so on. We did other things as well. But while I was taking her through this, she started to smile. And this was the first smile, of course. And I thought, well, something good's happening. And she said afterwards, oh, it was fantastic. She said, I shoved him in the quicksand. Every time his head came up, I put a foot in his head and shoved him under again. And I saw her again 10 days later. And she said, no problem. From that point, from the time I did that, I got over it. Now, you can't get much simpler than that. And I find lots of simple things like that work like a charm.
And I know that from Let the Trade Winds Flow, that your techniques are fantastically simple and fantastically powerful. Let's talk about a couple more of them, or give us another one of your favourites.
Oh, lots. Actually, I find a lot of people have problems because they are allowing the thoughts of others to influence them negatively. We're surrounded by misery. I mean, you get it on the news. The news is just a litany of disasters. Something I learned when I was, years ago, Natalie, before I'd started doing much therapy work, I was asked by a psychologist in Adelaide at the time if I could help her. She'd had a nervous breakdown, and every time she was coming good, she relapsed again. And it became quite obvious that what was happening is her husband and mother, both of whom were quite jealous of her, were pulling her down every time with all this really negative input and so on. And I don't know where the idea came from. I have used it again many times. But I suggested she had a golden helmet, and like when knights used to go into battle, they would pull the visor down in front of their face to shield their face. What I got her to do is every time they started on her, she would imagine she had this helmet, pull the visor down and bounce it all back at them. From that point, she got better. We did other things as well, but that was the key thing that was a turnaround for her. And in fact, I get a lot of my patients doing that to shield themselves from the negative input, because there are people who walk around with black clouds around them. They infect everyone around them. They're just miserable. it's so easy to let yourself be dragged down by the misery of, you know, people around you.
Harry, what's the psyche behind critical people?
But often there's a lack of satisfaction in their own life. You see, I think and my profession's been very guilty of this, trying to promote the idea that the normal state is one of happiness. And if you're not happy, there's something wrong and we can fix you, we'll make you feel happier. The Dalai Lama put it a bit better. He felt the normal state is one of suffering and that we occasionally have flashes of happiness. But I think a better word for it is contentment. Instead of rushing out to go to a rock concert to make yourself feel good or to seek something outside yourself that'll make you feel better, feel happier, is to look at the little mundane things you do every day that can give you a sense of contentment. The pleasure of savouring a cup of coffee, for example, feeling the warmth of the cup as you cradle it in your hand, drawing in the aroma, feeling the taste and so on, savouring food in the same way, focusing on what you're doing at the moment and getting pleasure from that and getting a sense of contentment with that, is it something as enjoyable as what I did a few minutes ago, is patting the dog. And the dog obviously loves you and it's a lovely feeling. And I think our days are full of things like that, except we ignore them. We just whisk forward into the future. And that comes back to something else, I think, that came out of that the slight edge, is something that most people who make a success of their lives do, and they focus on the present moment. I mean, someone can be telling you about how miserable I am, how awful it is, and you can say, look, stop, where are you? And eventually it dawns on them they're here. What's the time? Now. Here and now. You're not feeling like that, are you? And we don't focus on here and now. We're too busy agonizing over something we've done or worrying about what would happen if. And most of the things that we worry about happening in the future never happen. There was a study done, I think, 17,000 people roughly in America. They're asked, what's the one thing you're most worried about happening to you in the next 12 months? At the end of the 12 months, they went back to find out, 1.8%. Hardly any of those things had happened, and people had worried themselves sick about the fact they might have. I think you've got to focus on the here and the now and enjoy the present moment. That's how you get a sense of contentment in your life, I think. That every day, there are things in the day from which you can get pleasure and enjoyment if you're not rushing forward to the next thing and just ignoring it.
The final question of this interview is taking the action. And there's a quote, do the thing and you shall have the power.
Well, I think, one of the problems, and this is taught at school too, is you shouldn't make mistakes. They're bad, they're terrible, and so on. But in fact, how do you learn? I mean, you learn through your mistakes. And hopefully you don't keep making the same ones. There's so many, we've got a lot of choices. But the fact is, you do it, you learn that way. You learn what not to do in the future and how you can do something better. A point that he made in the book I thought that was very important about a child, I think, by the time they're 5 years old, has heard 40,000 no's and about 5,000 yeses. That's pretty true, I think, that we're constantly told what we can't do. And I think one of the biggest mistakes we make is that there's a book called The 5-Minute Manager, came out years and years ago, where a couple of Americans were looking at successful and unsuccessful firms. And they could only find one thing that really consistently separated the two. The successful firms, the executives, found people doing something right and praised them for it. In the unsuccessful firms, they seem to find people doing something wrong and blame them for it. So we come back to this blame and responsibility thing again. And unfortunately, your good teachers do this. They catch kids doing something right and praise them, but far too many are obsessed with catching kids doing something wrong and blaming them for it. And parents do the same thing, constantly.
And that's also pretty much how you should be speaking to yourself as well.
Now, that's not fair. I was about to say that next.
I read your mind.
But it's quite true. It's the way you talk to yourself. We are experts at finding things wrong and blaming ourselves for it, feeling bad about it, rather than catching ourselves doing good things, which I'm sure we do a lot more probably than the bad things, and giving ourselves a pat on the back for it.
Any final words of wisdom on the slight edge?
We just got them.
Stay in the moment.
No, that was the key thing. I think if there's something he was saying a lot of was about you need the philosophy. Everything stems from your philosophy. That's where I think something like this, focusing on the here and now, is so important. We've known for centuries that you try to live one day at a time. There's a couple of the businessmen that I've helped recently have got these digital watches. They live an hour at a time. If something doesn't go right for them, they wipe that and start the hour fresh. But I think that's what you do on a daily basis. You start fresh each morning, welcome the new day, the new opportunity, make your first thought something for which you're grateful, which starts you on a good train of thought rather than something you're worried about, and you enjoy the day. And irrespective of what may happen, you start fresh the next day. Makes life better.
Thank you so much for your time. Coming on to Talking Trading again.
Yes, thank you, Caroline. It's always nice talking to you. You ask such good questions.
And stay tuned next week, guys, to hear best-selling author Ian Bogost, who challenges and looks at our notions of fun and play and what they really mean for us. I'm Caroline Stephen. Have a good week in the markets. We'll see you next time.
You've been listening to TalkingTrading.com.au with Caroline Stephen. Make sure you are subscribed to this website to receive the very latest market views, commentary, and expert opinion. Tune in next week as we've got a bumper show planned. Bye for now.
The views represented on Talking Trading are general in nature and do not take into account your objectives, financial situation, or needs. Before acting on any of the information, consider its appropriateness in regard to your own situation.